welcome to a historic version of Nocturnal General tonight, live from Willie Dixon's Blues Heaven at the Historic Chess Studios. That was 2120. That's my David Letterman moment. That's good. So we've got a whole bunch, a boatload of guests. We've got some live music from the Cashbox Kings. I'm Dave Hoekstra, and let's just start right off with Jackie Dixon. Thanks for having us, the president of Blues Heaven.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me.
And we've known each other for a long time. Can you briefly talk about why we're here? Let's talk about phase one, what you did when you got the building, phase two, and what's coming up in phase three.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to say that Dave is the first journalist that actually gave me credibility. This is my first real interview when he was with the newspaper. So since then, we've had a few conversations about the different phases that we're doing for Blues Heaven. We're in phase three now, which is where we ultimately wanted to get to. Phase one began in 1992, actually after my dad passed. My mom began looking for a location for the foundation, and in 93, Phil Chess, the younger brother of Leonard Chess, called, and I actually took the call, and he said that the building was available and that we should try to acquire it. He knew that my dad was interested in it, and he felt he deserved it. So from there, phase one began, which was my mom acquiring the building, the restoration. They took a lot of donations. She made some private investments towards it. She purchased it, restored it, and then donated it to the foundation. So it's owned by the foundation now.
Paint a picture, before we go to phase two, paint a picture for the listeners of the room we're in right now and what happened here.
Okay.
We're on the second floor.
Right. This is the this was actually the studio. It had panelings up when Chess was here. That the rear portion was more of a storage area and for extra equipment and instruments. And then there were two doors, and it was a wall that separated here. But this is where the recordings took place, in this room.
And our band loaded in tonight the same way they did back in the day. Talk about that.
Right. Okay, so the musicians entered through the rear staircase. It was easy access from the alley. So all the blues musicians that came in to record would enter that way. And when other people would come to audition, they would enter through the front stairs. And they would meet, actually, Minnie Riperton at the at the front counter. She was the receptionist here, and she would give them a have them wait until they could get a chance to audition.
And in some of the books I've written, we always talk about how a place isn't a place until it's remembered. What are your earliest memories of this? When were you first in here?
Actually, I was never in here until my mom purchased the
okay.
building. We had driven past a lot of times. I was actually on the bus, and I saw this place, and I knew that my dad had been part of this when it was a studio. I knew that he had expressed an interest in it, and he began the process of trying to acquire it, and then it kind of fell apart, and so a little politics. And so I knew that it was a place that he desired to own, but I wasn't sure that it would ever happen.
And what turned around? How did it happen?
Like I said, Phil Chess made us aware that it was available. The person that owned it before, I guess he was just, you know, having a difficult time maintaining a space of this size. And also, you know, it had kind of started to deteriorate quite a bit over the years. It had been used in different ways, rented out for parties. And I think there was a disco ball in the ceiling here where they were using it as a club, and I guess it was a dance studio at one point. And so, and a lot of things had already been removed from the original structure. So
phase three, that's what's going to go on in phase three now.
Yeah, so phase three is where we got the studio up, which was my dad's dream. He's never lived anywhere or had any property that didn't have a studio in it. When we lived on the south side in off of Troop Street, we had a studio in the basement. And then he had Soul Productions on 77th and Racine, and that was the Blues Factory. And then we, where we lived in California, we had a studio in the garage. So he always had a place where he could record and make music and create. So naturally, when we acquired this place, putting the studio in was a definite first mission, but we had to get to phase one and two first.
And so we have Glenn Forrest on the panel.
How you doing?
Thanks for joining us, Glenn. So you're the chief engineer here at Blues Heaven.
Yes, I am.
So tell us about the work you've been doing in restoring the studio.
We got in here about 2 months ago and brought in a bunch of gear here from New York, actually. And we've been setting it up and checking the room and just making it happen, you know.
And did you, I was asking, did you do research? Did you talk to, you know, did you do research on Ron Malo and some of the people who worked in here?
Absolutely.
What vibes did you pick up?
Absolutely. I mean, just a lot of research on recording techniques and obviously just listening to a lot of the music that was done here.
And so tell us what you've done in the room, what type of gear you have. You've got an analog recording.
Oh, yeah. We're looking to restore the space to, you know, circa 1965, mid-60s type of recording techniques, so analog tape and tons of tube equipment and ribbon mics and stuff like that, you know.
And it will be open to the public this summer?
Yeah, we're hoping to get open, to be open by June or the 1st of June, hopefully by the Blues Fest, that we'll do our first recording.
And anybody can record here? How, you know, bands, musicians in need? Talk about your game plan.
Well, one of the plans for Blues Heaven, one of the programs, is to give local musicians or any musician that's in need of studio time an opportunity to come in, because our rate is going to be a little bit higher because it is a historical studio. And so not everybody will have the opportunity to record here at their own expense. So what we're going to do is a program that will allow them to come in and do a demo, maybe get a couple hours. So we're still working on that.
And who all has recorded? There's been stuff done here. People have been portable. We were talking about it. They've run in portable gear. I think maybe did Ron Wood or somebody do that?
Yeah, what we had was, the first person to come in and record here, I believe, was Styx. They came in and they brought a trailer with all of their equipment outside. And it was Styx with Coco Taylor and Johnny Johnson from Chuck Berry's keyboard player. And then after that, Steve Jordan, the drummer for Eric Clapton, and he's with the John Mayer trio. And so he came in with Pino Palladino, Ron Woods. They brought in, what's his name? That was the guitar player for Howlin' Wolf.
Hubert Sumlin?
Hubert, yeah. They brought in Hubert. He was so exhausted that he asked my mom if he could leave. And so she held him a taxi and let him go back to the hotel. But they came in and he recorded with his own band, The Verbs, so that was after. And they brought in some equipment. There wasn't a full gear like what we have, but it was just set up in the back part of the studio.
You're in for a treat. The Cashbox Kings, we heard them during soundcheck. They sound really, really, really good.
They were great.
It'll be great. Tim Samuelson, City of Chicago historian. Thanks for joining us, Tim, on Nocturnal Journal.
Well, thanks for having me here.
And so tell us what, you have such an insight into the building. Tell us a little bit about the history of the building, when it was built, its original use.
Well, the building goes back to 1911, when it was the most unglamorous place for selling automobile tires. This was the old Motor Row. And then over the years, they did things like make upholstery slipcovers in here. Not the place that you would expect to turn the music business on its end. But in 1956, this building was bought by the Chess Brothers as their first modern headquarters. Now, you know, Capitol Records has their big fancy L.A. building shaped like a stack of discs and with all their fancy consultants and whatnot. And here's this little building that was like the middle of nowhere. And they kind of fix it up a little bit in the front, you know, the best the 1950s have to offer. But they're also able to have, for their first time, their own permanent studio. And you could then get the musicians to come in, and unlike you're at a commercial studio where you're kind of on the clock, the musicians could kind of hang around and talk and discuss and actually get a performance that would be close to what you would have in a live club. Nobody's hurrying you. And it was great. I mean, for the original sound engineer, Jack Weiner, in fact, we met him, and he was like a 20-year-old techno geek. And it was a case of where Leonard Chess, he had him wire his house for hi-fi. He says, hey, you want to build out my studio? And so he did. In fact, it was what he called Sheldon Recording Studios, because he also did his own sessions up here. Hand-built the consoles. We were able to take him through, and a lot of our recollections of what were here were based on what he found. And we even went scrounging old parts at the old Universal Studios.
It was a destination point, too. Both of you can talk about that. I mean, Chuck Berry drove here, and there's a story I remember, Ike and Tina Turner parking in front. And stuff.
Yeah, I mean, everyone who was
anyone. People sought this place out.
Yeah, I mean, it was a place that was a place you wanted to record. I mean, this is why the Rolling Stones sought out the place. That's why you have a instrumental, 2120 South Michigan Avenue. That's a love song to this building. They came here, but the people who were in here, Chuck Berry, Bo Diddley, Howlin' Wolf, and to even hear not only the recordings that were made here, but even some of the off takes. I mean, I think I even did a description of some of those. I have the honor of being the first person ever bleeped on the History Channel by giving some of the recounting of what went on in this very studio, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah. We were looking at the pictures downstairs. I mean, there was a lot of cigarette smoking and just, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were restoring the studio. Yeah. We would get different musicians who were here originally to give their critique. Does it look like what you remember? And we asked Bo Diddley, and he said, well, there's something really wrong with this place. And I thought, uh-oh. He said, it's too clean. You have to bring people in here with cigarettes and have them stub them out into the walls and leave the butts on the floor. Then you'll have an authentic restoration.
So, Jackie, on Facebook today, I told you you teed up my questions and stuff. But number three is, what's Jackie doing with the business since her mom passed? I know you lost your mom recently, and this, right. She was very, very obviously into this. Yeah. So how has that transition been for you?
It's been very interesting because a lot of people didn't know I even existed. Mm-hmm. You know, I was kind of behind the scenes, and my mom was the front person. So a lot of times she would, you know, I would get things ready for her. But she had met so many people, had such a huge influence on so many people. She advised musicians all the time. You know, she was there to help in so many ways. And so people kind of expect the same of me, and I do the best I can.
Okay, we're going to pick up on that. We're going to take a break. So don't go away from Blues Heaven Chess Studios at 2120 South Michigan.